proved to be invaluable to us. The right support system, mentor, and coach will push you to be uncomfortable. He or she will push you beyond what you thought was possible, get you to think differently. This is a sign of a great support system. If they aren't supporting your vision and pushing you along the way, you deserve someone else, because otherwise you may never achieve what you want in life. Dedicate and invest in yourself. We invested a tremendous amount of time, money, and energy into personal development. Your business and your life will be a reflection of you. Mahatma Gandhi once said, quote, "For things to change, first I must change," end quote. You can suppress the growth of your business or you can lead it to success. We have never stopped dedicating time to improving ourselves and the work we do. This wasn't something we did in our free time. It is part of the business plan. Get a financial education. When we were first starting out, the two of us knew very little about what money really is, how to raise capital, how to make investments, or the difference between active and passive income. The key to beginning our financial education was choose to be rich, but that was only the beginning. Bottom line, it became clear very early on that regardless of your social mission, you can't run a successful business without respecting the power of financial education. Continue to learn as the business grows. As the world and economies change, there is always more to know. Build a business plan. Here's where you really get to think through the business design. Is the business leverageable, financeable, expandable, and predictable? No one will give you capital to build your business if you cannot show, on paper at least, that you have invested time, energy, and resources into thinking through your business, its mission, the team members involved, and how you are going to return the investor's capital. This is where the rubber meets the road in terms of a social enterprise's viability. As it turns out, the steps we took to lay a solid foundation in our business align pretty neatly with those recommended by many of the major players in the social entrepreneurship sector. In fact, in a November 2002 report by Case entitled, "The Process of Social Entrepreneurship, Creating Opportunities Worthy of Serious Pursuit," authors Aisha Guklu, J. Gregory Deese, and Beth Battle Anderson say that personal experience usually drives the formation of social enterprises. That is followed by a determination of social need, or the gaps between socially desirable condition and the existing reality. Then, because a social needs assessment often overemphasizes the negative, social entrepreneurs determine where the assets are that can be leveraged to create wealth. Finally, they create change and are constantly inspired by it, seeking opportunities to have a positive social impact. Guklu, Deese, and Anderson say, quote, "Successful social entrepreneurs embody this how-can attitude, particularly in the idea generation phase. Effective social entrepreneurs carry this orientation into the opportunity development process, engaging in continuous innovation, adaptation, analysis, and learning along the way," end quote. Really, this is and was a major key to our success, this process of engaging in continuous innovation, adaptation, and learning along the way. Miriam Schoening, the head of the Schwab Foundation for Social Entrepreneurship, a global organization whose mission is to highlight and advance leading models of sustainable social innovation, has identified 7 basic tenets or pieces of advice for social entrepreneurs after having worked in the sector for 10 years. 1. Follow your passion. It's the most important ingredient, and it's what will keep you going in the tough times. 2. Balance your passion with rationale. Are you addressing a real, substantiated need? 3. Brainstorm. Generate 1,000 ideas and don't be afraid to consider them, refine them, dismiss them, or replace them. 4. Carefully choose your business model and articulate your vision, mission, and systems for evaluation and measurement from day 1. 5. Study approaches that lead to the same impact you're trying to achieve. Is your idea really as unique as you think? Consider the competitive landscape. 6. Consider franchising your social enterprise. It's arguable that what we need most is for entrepreneurs to take their brilliant ideas to other parts of the world. 7. Give yourself a minimum of 3 years, or 36 months, whichever sounds shorter, to get your enterprise off the ground and into calmer waters.
Perhaps for us, the fact that the life we were leaving behind would have killed me eventually is what kept us at it night and day, working on this business despite the obstacles. We literally felt as if we had no choice. Like a frog in tepid water that is slowly cooked as the pot works its way to a boil, I could see myself dying a little every single day I remained a nightclub employee. And despite Lisa's respectable profession and the contribution she made each day as an officer to the social good, it often left her unsatisfied and craving a more significant outlet in which she could improve our lives and the lives of those around us. So perhaps that's the real key to a successful social enterprise, the fact that doing nothing about a problem or injustice, or failing to address it properly, affects a lot more people than just you.
For-profit or non-profit? You certainly don't have to create a business to begin solving problems. Plenty of people join the Peace Corps or Doctors Without Borders. It's wonderful to donate money to or volunteer for the Sierra Club, the Nature Conservancy, Feed the Children, Feeding America, the Green Children Foundation, or any other charitable organization, and lots of amazing people do this. It's much needed, and we would hate to disparage those important efforts by indicating somehow that this kind of selfless act should be supplanted by a for-profit business model with profit being the ultimate goal. Journey Healing Center stemmed from our desire to create an environment that supported life and made us a living while we were doing something important to assist others. But that's not to say that the efforts of volunteers and nonprofit organizations are somehow less worthy. We will say, however, that the desire to give back to the world or to solve a social problem need not be relegated to the nonprofit or non-governmental organization, NGO, realm. What many people like us are discovering is that not only are the desires for being a service and earning a profit no longer mutually exclusive, but that in many cases, the for-profit model is more sustainable and powerful over the long term. After all, anyone who controls your funding ultimately controls you. By having a for-profit, we can expand the business to be more responsive, provide a much-needed service to humanity in all socioeconomic class, and give more easily to other charities through doing our work in a free market with fewer regulatory constrictions. One believer of this premise is Michael Holdhouse, a Texas-based philanthropist and longtime entrepreneur who was founder and president of Paranet, Inc., a computer network services company established in 1990. He was an Inc. magazine Entrepreneur of the Year and two-time Inc. 500 Fastest Growing Company winner. After selling Paranet to Sprint in 1997, Holdhouse channeled his energies and financial resources into philanthropic projects, including the Holdhouse Foundation for Kids, a foundation that focuses on proactive and experiential programs for at-risk youth, and Prepared for Life, a nonprofit that operates Lemonade Day, an experiential, community-based program that develops life skills and teaches youth about the skills and values of entrepreneurship through the formation of lemonade stands. Holdhouse says, quote, "There are lots of 501c3s out there that are currently operating off the kind of model that says, I'm doing good in the world, but I've got to go to foundations and get money from them in order to keep doing what I'm doing. But that model is a dinosaur, and it isn't going to last much longer. Every group that wants to address a social issue is going to have to operate like a real business. They'll have to operate with budgets, revenues, and services that they provide. They'll have to operate as any business would. The profits may not be distributed to shareholders, but would be reinvested back into the organization so that it can increase the number of people it serves or improve the quality by which it serves people." End quote. R. Christine Hershey, president and founder of Hershey Cause, a strategic communications firm that works with social entrepreneurs and corporations to build brands and create campaigns that help advance social change, says, Quote, I think social entrepreneurs share the trait that we don't think we should need to starve to make a difference. One of the reasons we haven't solved the world's biggest problems is that folks in those sectors are underfunded. End quote. It's why Hershey suggests that any social venture still be grounded in business best practices. She says, quote, it's almost as if, in the old days, in the nonprofit model, there was a virtue that nonprofits didn't need to be vigorous or think strategically. I think that's turned into a crutch, and I think that's why a lot of them are barely limping along. I think they need the rigorous best practices to figure out how they'll survive and make a bigger contribution. End quote. The Obama administration has set forth world food security as a top priority in its foreign policy plans. But rather than relying on NGOs to handle this, the administration has shared that a for-profit philosophy can be the change maker. A February 2011 article in the Voice of American News, voanews.com, relates a story about Mozambique's poultry farming practices. Because farmers there couldn't afford medicines or enough food to properly raise chickens, the chickens they produced were often spoiled or too thin to compete on a global scale with other foreign producers. When TechnoServe, a non-governmental organization based in Washington, D.C., that provides business development assistance to aid in breaking the cycle of poverty in third world countries, and Cargill, an agribusiness corporation, got involved with financial, regulatory, and business development support, the quality of poultry raised in Mozambique drastically improved. It created jobs, improved incomes for farmers, and ultimately improved the quality of poultry that Cargill could then sell, which in turn bolstered its bottom line. The motive for profit became a win-win-win for farmers, for industry, and for consumers, while ultimately accomplishing a major step in the fight for world food security. What we found as we started Journey Healing Centers is that we really prefer to have control over ourselves and how we run the business. We decided to run it as a true revenue-generating business so that we could continue to reinvest in the very best services and treatments for our customers. How could we expect to attract the very best addiction counselors and doctors by relying on the nonprofit model of relying on kind donations of time from busy professionals? The triple bottom line philosophy comes up frequently in discussions of social entrepreneurship. The three prongs of this triple bottom line are typically referred to as the three P's: people, planet, and profit. Social enterprises aspire to a bottom line that achieves social mission, benefits, or does no harm to the planet and still earns a profit. For us, this triple bottom line morphed into social value, profit, and freedom. That is, providing social value, profit that enables us to continue doing it, and freedom from the shackles of addiction and a destructive lifestyle, not only for ourselves, but for those we treat as well. And, as we learn more about moving from employee to business owners and ultimately investors, we earned financial freedom as well.
It's important to note, though, that the term social capitalist might imply that we were somehow all about money, that because we embraced the rich dad philosophies of growing wealth, we were somehow looking to capitalize on others' misery in order to grow wealthy. The truth is that if money were our motive, I would have stayed in the nightclub business. It certainly could provide a lavish lifestyle. I could eventually have taken over from my father and run and expanded a very successful nightclub operation. Lisa and I volunteer for Journey Healing Centers. We have never taken a paycheck from the company. From day one, we have invested money back into the business to improve, expand, and enhance its offerings. And we have established a toll-free 24-hour addiction hotline run by a call center that operates 7 days a week and takes calls from anyone looking for support, advice, or resources, regardless of whether the callers are seeking treatment from JHC. And the truth is that it's okay to be profitable while helping the world. In fact, as global trends seem to indicate, it may be preferable. Chapter Thought. How would you characterize your relationship with money? Do you curse it because you don't have enough? Do you speak poorly of those people who have it? Money is only an idea. If you change your thoughts about money, you can change how you relate to it. Money was designed to serve you, not for you to serve it.
Part 3. Mastering the BI Triangle. Choose your team and your teachers wisely. Who's on your team? Robert Kiyosaki. Mastering the BI Triangle. Like the human body, Rich Dad's BI Triangle is a system of systems. When one system is weak or failing, the entire body is impacted. The same is true in business. In this section, the Rich Dad team explains the importance of each of the 8 integrities of a business, the 8 critical components of the BI Triangle. Mission. Mission is Spiritual by Kim Kiyosaki.
Mission is spiritual, the soul of a company. Robert and I are mission-driven, and so is the Rich Dad Company. We live and breathe our mission, to elevate the financial well-being of humanity. If there is one thing that has become crystal clear as the Rich Dad Company has evolved over the past 2 decades, it's that mission is sacred. It is spiritual, and it shapes the culture of an organization. It is the foundation of our brand, just as mission is the foundation of the BI Triangle. Mission, coupled with leadership and team, create the framework for the 5 elements that are critical to the success of a business. And it all starts with and builds upon mission. At military school and in the Marine Corps, Robert learned the spiritual power of mission. In Vietnam, he learned the importance of having a team united by the same mission. He often shared the fact that having a strong mission, whether at King's Point or in the Marine Corps or at Rich Dad, provided discipline and made him a stronger member of the team, a stronger and more effective leader. My role in the Rich Dad BI Triangle related to mission is as keeper of the spirit. The spirit of a company is what connects us with the minds and hearts of everyone associated with the brand, employees, partners, fans, and followers. Spirit fuels the passion that makes us fearless and tireless as we pursue the goals and dreams we have for our businesses. There is an incredible energy in our company, and that spirit is reflected in our entrepreneurial culture, in the contrarian nature of our brand, and in those people around the world who have embraced the Rich Dad messages and taken action in their lives. In Asia, they call Rich Dad the Purple Storm, as it has swept across the world with power and passion and purpose. It wasn't until Robert and I were clear on our mission and saw how we could serve in addressing the pressing need in the world for financial education that we talked about product development. Each day, as we hear from people around the world whose lives have been changed for the better by the messages of Rich Dad and the work of the Rich Dad Company and its partners around the world, our spirits soar. We know that we have put our talents and gifts to good use in serving a global community that is hungry for knowledge and open to learning more about money and how to make it work for them in their lives.
For Kim's Colby Index, please see companion file number 26. Leadership, Life as a CEO by Mike Sullivan Esquire, CEO of the Rich Dad Company and serial entrepreneur. Leadership styles vary considerably from company to company, based upon a wide variety of things. The personality of the leader, certainly, but also the culture of the company, the business climate, and the industry. In today's fast-paced information age world, markets and market condition changes are fast and furious. Procrastination and indecisiveness can be a killer and give competitors an edge or an opening. Strong leaders, I've found, trust their instincts when it comes to cultivating a leadership style that serves their company and brand, the marketplace, and their customers, as well as their own personal strengths and the corporate culture. Steve Jobs, it said, was very much of a micromanager, with a leadership style very different from that of Tim Cook. Warren Buffett, on the other hand, is known for taking a hands-off approach toward leadership of the companies he owns or invests in, trusting his managers to know how to achieve the performance he expects. I'd describe myself as a hands-off leader with an easygoing management style. Those who have worked with me know that, outwardly, I come across as very hands-off. But behind the scenes, I'm really very hands-on. I have a gift, I think, for cultivating relationships with our managers, our team members, our strategic partners, and all the stakeholders of the business. That helps me to know what's really going on in the business, and that's a key advantage. I'm able to zero in on problem areas and make sure our leaders have the resources and guidance they need to do their jobs well. I'm a guy who deals directly with issues and problems that arise, and I believe in cutting your losses quickly. If you don't, the indecisiveness compounds the problem and poisons the team. They deserve a leader who has a clear vision for the future, who understands that we hold each other accountable for meeting the expectations and standards we set, and who calls it as he sees it, even when it's a tough call. That said, I set high expectations for management and our teams, and come down hard when expectations aren't met, or when we aren't delivering to our potential and the brand standards of the Rich Dad Company. I set the rules for how our team will operate, and it doesn't take long for people to understand that they have one shot to step up and deliver. I don't pull punches. I deliver honest direction on how we'll operate and do my best to deliver serious and thoughtful feedback that will help our team grow and thrive. And by extension, the business will thrive. And if teams or individuals are underperforming, they'll get fair warning that things need to change. And if they respect the culture of our organization and want to continue to play on a first-rate team, they usually do. Later in this section of the audiobook on Mastering the BI Triangle, Shane writes about the role of technology in business today. When I took the reins of leadership at the Rich Dad Company, one of the first things I realized was the power of the brand globally. It was beyond belief. And immediately, I knew two things. One was that I needed someone who was a visionary when it came to technology, and the other was that we needed to make staying connected to the massive worldwide community of raving Rich Dad fans a high communications priority. When I was first introduced to Robert and Kim, and our conversations led to the role I would take with the Rich Dad Company, I knew that I couldn't accomplish all that the job would require without an IT whiz kid. And lucky for me and the Rich Dad Company, I had just the guy. My longtime business partner, Shane Caniglia, a young gun who had embraced all the opportunities that technology could deliver in our existing businesses, Shane has a healthy skepticism for the status quo and doesn't think twice when it comes to questioning everything and challenging the way we think and do things today. Very Rich Dad. Even before he took the role of president at the Rich Dad Company. Shane will be sharing his thoughts about teams and systems related to the BI triangle later in this audiobook. I'm often asked how my leadership style has evolved over the years. Experience provides both context and perspective, and in nearly 5 decades of work in entrepreneurial businesses, I've seen a tremendous amount of change, most for the better, and much of it opening the door for new opportunities, new ways to do things, more efficient and profitable ways to operate and serve your customer base. One thing I've seen is that, regardless of the company or the product or the industry, the same problems arise again and again, and I knew there was a message in that. Experience is a great teacher, and my years of experience have helped me to make decisions faster and with more confidence. I think the mark of a strong leader is that he or she can deliver strong and constructive feedback, feedback that will make both the individual and the team better. One of the strengths I bring to Rich Dad as its CEO is that I work hard to see both sides of issues and problems. While I might not agree with everyone, it's important that I understand and appreciate other points of view. Robert often talks about a coin having 3 sides, your side, my side, and the edge, from which we can see both sides. I've learned to keep a lot of my thoughts and thought processes to myself as I take in and process information, and people rarely know exactly what's going on in my head. A little mystery is good. and keeps everyone on his or her toes. Don't get me wrong. I'm open and honest in my communications. I just don't always put all my cards on the table in terms of how I might think or act in the future. That strategy has served me well over the years, as I've observed, listened, and processed what I see and hear. Part of the rich dad culture that has really resonated with me is that making mistakes is how we learn. As a leader, I think it's important to let people know that it's okay to make mistakes. Just don't make the same ones over and over again. There's a lot we can learn from mistakes if we're paying attention and applying what we learn. That's usually a tough leadership lesson to learn, since society conditions us to believe that mistakes are bad or reflect poorly on us or our ability to do the job right. I've been called a serial entrepreneur, and that describes me well. I've learned that CEOs of all large companies all face the same challenges, and nobody reinvents the wheel. It's always about people and money. The key is to hire good people, train them, and support them. Set clear expectations around the mission of the company and their role on the team. People work best, in my experience, when they're clear on objectives, focused on common goals, and know that they are valued and appreciated. The rest is up to them. The biggest challenges I've faced as an entrepreneur and leading entrepreneurial organizations have revolved around raising money, securing the money that lets you do what you need to do. If you're always up against the wall financially, you're always thinking about money. Instead of outpacing your competition, building a world-class team, and growing the business. Being strapped for cash takes your focus off your vision for the future and often means that you're not hiring the best talent or cutting corners or delaying growth strategies, for which you'll eventually pay a price. In addition to being a serial entrepreneur, I'm kind of a sports nut. So I thought I'd close with a quote from Lou Holtz, famed Notre Dame football coach. Quote, "It's a fine thing to have ability, but the ability to discover ability in others is the true test," unquote. That's a key role of a leader, to discover and nurture talent that can propel an organization into the future. What words of wisdom on leadership would I share with entrepreneurs? That's easy. Don't get caught up in the minutiae, the little stuff that can bog you down. Things like, do we have the right name, the right logo? Should we set up a business as an LLC or a corporation? Those decisions are best left to the specialist, your legal and communications teams, so the leader can focus on the big picture and the future. I've worked with many companies, large and small, and the one thing that is constant is money. I mentioned it earlier. Having the money to do what you need to do, to launch a business or grow one, is critical. I see entrepreneurs fall into the same trap time and time again. They have their business plan, and it might be a killer business plan, but without the money behind it, the odds of stellar success are against them. They may have that million-dollar idea, but not the financial wherewithal to create the business that will make them millions. If I were to choose three words that would sum up my leadership legacy, they would be these: plan, execute, and change. A plan is only as good as a leader's ability to stay the course and correct and adjust over time. For Mike Sullivan's Colby Index, please see companion file number 27. Team. There is no I in team, by Shane Coniglia, president of the Rich Dad Company. Team, along with mission and leadership, are the three elements of a business that frame the BI triangle. They make sure it holds its shape, its structural integrity. If these three of the eight integrities of a business are not rock solid, the foundation is shaky. And it's tough to build anything that can stand up to all the challenges businesses face if you have a weak foundation. Robert and Kim set the vision for the Rich Dad Company and its mission. Mike Sullivan, Rich Dad's CEO and a guy I've known and been business partners with for many years, is a strong leader who lives the entrepreneurial spirit. He appreciates and respects the culture at Rich Dad and gives our team the room to learn and grow. My role, related to team, has been multifaceted, with responsibilities for business rules, systems and processes, technology, and talent. My experience with building teams has taught me that there are parts of the process that are universal, the same for all organizations, regardless of the type of business or industry sector, and parts that are truly unique to our business. For me, that's what has always been the appeal and the challenge in hiring, shaping, and growing strong teams. It's part science and part art, tangibles and intangibles. And when you get the mix just right, it's an amazing experience to be a part of. I would describe my management style as flat. We're a team, and we all contribute to creating the very best outcomes. And while titles are important for the outside world, they divide people internally. Additionally, they can pigeonhole an individual and his or her thought process and actions to be based only on their responsibility or skill set or job description. This thought or division in the brain tends to stifle both the team and individual creativity. At Rich Dad, we apply the rule that team members need to always communicate, and when it's your time to speak, you respectfully present your thoughts and prepare for feedback. We build upon the feedback until the ideas begin to come to life. It's a great process, and we've all learned to give and take helpful and well-intended feedback. When building or expanding our team, we always assess interpersonal skills in the interviewing process. We believe that we can teach a new team member any skill set, and we will quickly learn whether a candidate's strengths and skill set match what he or she has said they are. If during the interview process we hear the I word a lot, it is a clear sign of someone that is more worried about individual credit than overall team success. It also tells us that they're not a good listener and that they are more interested in how great they are than in how well they will complement the team. No one can do everything all by themselves. No matter what you do, it takes someone else to help you along the way. We live and work by this principle. There is no I in team. We look for individuals with a passion for learning and who can be humble about failures that are sure to be a part of the process of building brands and businesses. It's important that we're aware of lessons learned along the way and that we don't repeat the same mistakes. Mistakes aren't necessarily bad. In fact, we say, fail hard, fail fast. Sometimes they can teach us a lot, if we're paying attention. It's when we miss the lessons and repeat mistakes that mistakes become an issue. As we look to expand our team, someone who demonstrates knowledge of the Rich Dad brand certainly has a leg up in the hiring process. It tells us that they are prepared for the interview and gave some thought to how their skills and strengths could support the brand and its mission. Red flags in the team building process? One that we believe is a sure tell related to how good a fit someone will be is that I word. People who interrupt, don't listen, go on and on without making a point or answering a direct question are not a good fit for the team we've built and how we operate. The team at Rich Dad is committed to supporting each other and delivering whatever the project or program or challenge at the highest level. We set the bar high and expect that everyone on the team is willing to play their A game. And we never say, that's not my job. Team building in an entrepreneurial company is both challenging and exciting. We are always pushing ourselves to think differently, creatively, entrepreneurially. That's the culture at Rich Dad. Communication is critical. We teach and live by the golden rule. Teams cannot over-communicate. When something falters or fails, it invariably comes down to the communication. No communication, poor communication, or too little communication. We communicate internally and to the outside world, and our communications need to be consistent. The same levels of respect and clarity apply whether we're developing a new product launch, strategizing with our business partners, or communicating with the millions of people around the world who follow Robert and Rich Dad on Twitter and Facebook. We operate as a team, supporting and holding each other accountable. We over-communicate and always have our teammates' backs, and vice versa. We don't seek acknowledgement, and we win or lose as a team, not as individuals. It's because of that mindset that you'll never hear anyone at Rich Dad say, "Not my job." We must remember first and foremost that we are hiring and teaching humans. One thing I like to teach is that you are hiring humans to do the work, not the other way around. So learn to manage people, not just the work. And they have personal issues and goals, as well as professional goals. Those personal priorities are usually hidden from a company's management and their coworkers. Great leaders teach and help every person on the team dig deep and get in touch with themselves so they can believe in themselves and their potential. By doing this, leaders on the team help them develop confidence in things they didn't know or didn't think they could do. That growth is key to pushing someone farther than they thought they could go. And the success in making that happen always comes down to effective, consistent communication. Our goal is to build and grow a world-class team, a team that has high standards for communication and accountability, a team whose goal is to keep learning and growing. For Shane Coniglia's Colby Index, please see companion file number 28. Product. Why Product Doesn't Matter by Robert Kiyosaki. I hear it all the time. I have a great idea for a product. If only it were that easy. Most of us, at one time or another, have a really great idea. It's getting it to market with all the moving pieces of a business working in perfect harmony that separates the proverbial businessmen from the boys. As we've stated in the opening sections of this audiobook, many people have had a million-dollar idea. The problem is, most of us do not know how to turn that million-dollar idea into $1 million. That's where a team can make all the difference. The diagram my rich dad called the BI triangle represents the 8 components of every business. He called it the BI, Business Investor Triangle, because it is for those who operate on the right side of the cash flow quadrant, businesses and investors. When an entrepreneur builds a business, what they build is a BI triangle. If the entrepreneur cannot put all 8 of the components, the integrities, together, the business fails or suffers financially. Notice that the product, or the idea, is the least important part of the BI triangle. One reason why most entrepreneurs fail, even those with genuine million-dollar ideas, is because all they have is the top part of the triangle, the product. Most are missing one or more of the other integrities. Many people agonize over finding a great product or service. Many think a great product or new service will propel them into entrepreneurial heaven. That is delusional. As you may guess, the primary reason why 9 out of 10 entrepreneurs fail in the first 5 years is because they are unable to put the 8 pieces of the entrepreneur's puzzle together. Many crash and burn because one or more of the 8 pieces is missing, or weak, or mismanaged. For example, when I started my first big business, my nylon and Velcro surfer wallet business in the 1970s, I had a great product, the wallets, but I did not go to the step below product, legal. Because I did not have much money, I did not spend the $7,000 for attorney's fees to patent the product. After a year of hard work, making the nylon wallets a raging success, my wallet was ripped off by many manufacturers in Asia. Soon the U.S. market was flooded with cheap knockoffs of my hot new product. I could not do anything about it because I failed to spend the money to make my product proprietary, an asset that I owned and controlled. The word proprietary comes from the word property. The problem with most entrepreneurs is they work to make a lot of money, not develop property. At least, that is what I did. I was in such a hurry to sell a few wallets to make some money that I failed to create property, the real asset. It is property, not money, which makes entrepreneurs rich. If you have ever watched the TV show Shark Tank, you will often hear one of the sharks ask the entrepreneur, "Is your product proprietary?" These sharks have zeroed in on level 2 on the BI triangle, legal. Proprietary could refer to the product's patent, copyright, or trademark, or whether or not your product or your IP, intellectual property, can be licensed. That means someone would pay you to use your property. Simply put, proprietary is similar to legal real estate. Today, the Rich Dad Company licenses the right to use my intellectual property to more than 50 businesses around the world. That is why I am a rich entrepreneur. I make a lot of money without working, because the property I created is working for me. The young girl who was a successful babysitter would probably not become a rich entrepreneur because she was working for money rather than developing property. I know a few of you are still wondering about why product is the least important of the 8 integrities of a business. Let me answer that question now. Whenever someone wants to debate the importance of a product, I ask, "Have you ever eaten a McDonald's hamburger?" Regardless of where I am in the world, most people tell me they have. Most people, at one time or another, have eaten at McDonald's. I then ask, "Can you make a better hamburger than McDonald's?" Most say they can. I then ask, "Can you build a bigger and richer business than McDonald's?" Obviously, most say no. I end by saying, that is why product is not that important to being an entrepreneur. The ability to build a business is. Rich entrepreneurs work to build businesses, not hamburgers. They build assets. Once Kim and I were clear on our mission, we began product development. Once the prototype of the cash flow game was beta tested and Rich Dad Poor Dad was in manuscript, the next step in the BI triangle was legal. We needed a patent and trademark attorney to turn my products into property, branded products. I had learned my lessons from rock and roll. Rather than be the entrepreneur with the factories, employees, overhead, and other miseries of business, the Rich Dad Company was designed to be a brand. That is why the core Rich Dad Company is a small organization. We do not own factories, printing presses, or warehouses. We make our money by allowing businesses all over the world, businesses such as book publishing companies, to exercise the legal right to produce our products and pay the Rich Dad Company a royalty. In some ways, it's like money for nothing. Obviously, I make it sound easier than it really is. For Kim and me, it was a trying process. Today, Rich Dad is an international brand working cooperatively with partners all over the world. In many ways, Rich Dad is much like Coca-Cola. We own the brand and our partners own the printing presses that produce our books, seminars, and games under our license. If you want to learn how to build a better product, like a better hamburger, get a cookbook. This audiobook is not for you. This audiobook is about assembling your team, your BI triangle business structure that will support and drive your business. For Robert Kiyosaki's Kolbe Index, please see companion file number 29. Legal. Getting Legal in the BI Triangle by Garrett Sutton, Esquire. In the BI Triangle, legal is found just under product at the top of the pyramid. There is a good reason for legal to be one of the 8 integrities. As we discussed earlier, the influence of law and regulations affect every entrepreneur and investor. You will need attorneys who specialize in the areas you enter. If your field of endeavor is highly regulated, you want an attorney who specializes in those regulations. If you're going to create ideas and products, you want an intellectual property attorney to protect your creativity with patents, trademarks, and copyrights. But in all scenarios, you will be building and growing your assets. Accordingly, you will always need asset protection. It is a requirement that we all follow the law. It is a benefit when you understand and follow the laws that allow for and encourage wealth building. Viewing legal as not a burden, but rather a benefit, is the mindset of successful people. Growing your own wealth is proactive. You are the one to make it happen. As you do this, you must also engage in a protective activity. Again, you alone must make it happen. The government doesn't care if you protect yourself or not. Instead, you must be proactive in setting up your asset protection structure. You must work with your attorney to establish the right mix of LLCs, corporations, and trusts to protect your assets. Asset protection defined. Asset protection is a strategy used to prevent loss in our litigious society. It's based on the principle that assets in your name can be seized by a judgment creditor, someone who has sued and won in court. Assets held not in your name, but rather in a corporation or LLC, are better protected. But you must meet the legal requirements to have those protections in place. There are some states, such as California, with weak protection laws that require additional planning. You have several choices to make when it comes to business structures, collectively called entities. That's why it's so important to gain assistance on which entity and which state is best for your specific situation. There are 8 things you should know about protecting your assets. Number 1, plan your asset protection strategy before you get sued. People in business and investing get sued all the time. While it is quaint to think it won't happen to you, once a lawsuit arrives, it's too late to put protections in place. Just as you can't get insurance after a fire, you can't protect yourself once you've been threatened with a lawsuit. Either your structures are in place or they are not. This means you've got to set up your LLCs and corporations not only before you get sued, but before you know of a problem. The only possible way to be safe is to do it right from the start. Number 2, keep your personal and business assets separate. If you don't insulate your assets from those of your business, you could be in trouble. You don't want to operate your business in the form of a sole proprietorship or as a general partnership. These businesses are not registered protective entities. They're just you doing business as an individual. Your personal assets are not insulated from those of your business. Instead, they are one and the same, and easy for someone to reach. Not having separate bank accounts is also problematic. You can't do business or invest through a personal bank account without exposing your personal assets to attack. Number 3. Remember that it's risky to be a sole proprietor, and even riskier to be a general partner. If you're a sole proprietor and an angry customer sues you, any personal assets you own, such as your house or car, are not protected. Financial assets such as your bank account and some retirement accounts are also not protected. These can all be taken should a judgment be entered against you. With entities, we have the good, the bad, and the ugly. A sole proprietorship is the bad entity, offering no protection. The ugly entity is the general partnership. It is liability times 2. While they're easy to form, a handshake will do, the consequences to you are dramatic. You are now personally liable for not only your mistakes, but for your partner's errors and mistakes as well. Stay away from the bad and ugly entities. Number 4. Use a good entity for asset protection. To protect yourself, use one of the 4 good entities. These entities are chartered with your state or the strong state you choose, such as Wyoming or Nevada. These 4 good entities for limiting your liability are C corporations, S corporations, limited liability companies, LLCs, and limited partnerships, LPs. C corporations and S corporations are both corporations chartered with the state. The difference is in how they are taxed. A C corporation is taxed at the company level and the shareholder level, thus double taxation. The S corporation has flow-through taxation at the shareholder level. For more information, please see my book, Run Your Own Corporation, or visit corporatedirect.com. Number 5. Follow the corporate requirements so that legal protections remain intact. Chartering a corporation or LLC does not mean you are forever protected without effort. You must follow ongoing requirements to stay protected. You'll need to keep your company's registration up to date and sign any documents as a corporate officer and not as an individual, among other requirements. This is known as maintaining the corporate veil of protection. We provide this service to many of our clients. If you fail to follow these simple formalities, which apply to all good entities, a judgment creditor can pierce the corporate veil and seek your personal assets to satisfy a corporate debt. Piercing the veil claims succeed in almost half of all cases. Clearly, not enough people are following the rules. What are some of those formalities? They include, 1, perform all annual filings with the state and pay any fees. 2, have a resident agent in your state of formation and any state your company qualifies to do business in. 3, maintain a written record of all decisions, meeting minutes. 4, provide the world with corporate notice using Inc. or LLC on contracts and checks. 5, ensure the corporation is sufficiently capitalized. And 6, maintain separate bank accounts and tax filings. If you haven't followed these formalities, the time is now to do it right. Corporate cleanup services are available at Corporate Direct. Number 6. Obtain the proper insurance coverage. Insurance coverage is the first line of defense for all of us in both our personal and wealth-building activities. In business, you want insurance in place for your entrepreneurial activities and your real estate holdings. As an individual, you want insurance on your home and automobiles. From that policy, you can obtain umbrella insurance coverage, extending your personal coverage by $1 million or more. Attorneys know how to get insurance monies. They have a tougher time getting LLC or corporate interests. With enough insurance in place, they are less likely to go after your investments held in protective entities. What should you look for in an insurance policy? Here are a few things to consider. The liability insurance should cover injuries to third parties on your property. If you have people working as your employees, you must have workers' compensation insurance. Weigh whether your insurance should have increased cost of construction additions if your building should become damaged or require reconstruction. This means you'll be covered at today's construction prices instead of those of previous years. If you are a landlord, loss of rent riders can help you recover costs in the event your building is damaged and uninhabitable so that you can pay relocation costs or receive income from the property while it's being rebuilt to offset losses. These are only a few issues to consider. A good insurance broker should be one of your trusted team members. That said, be realistic. Insurance companies have an economic incentive not to cover every claim. They find reasons to deny coverage. So while you will have insurance, you will use entities as a second line of defense to protect your personal assets from your business claims. Number 7. Transfer property into the entity name. Too many people set up an LLC for their real estate holdings and think they are finished. There is another crucial step. You must transfer the title of that property from your name into the name of your new LLC. If the LLC exists, but it is not on title at the county recorder's office, you have no protection. Someone suing over the property will bring a claim against the owner of record. Without a transfer to the LLC, that is still you personally. Oops. Once you set up the LLC, make sure you file a grant or warranty deed, and not a quitclaim deed, transferring ownership into the LLC. There are several other issues involved in the process, which are covered in my book, Loopholes of Real Estate. Number 8. Can I set up asset protection after I get sued? The short answer, no. You will not be able to set up asset protection after you get sued. Asset protection is a privilege, not a right. Before you can protect your assets with an LLC or corporation, it must be set up in a timely manner. If you get sued on Tuesday and set up an LLC on Wednesday, you are not protected. A judge can ignore your new LLC that showed up late to the party. A few years ago, a California woman approached me to ask how much it would cost for our incorporation services. She was the owner of several duplexes and had been renting them out to various tenants. She felt the price of protection was too high, in part because the state of California charges $800 per year per entity. She decided not to set up an LLC as a buffer between her and her tenants. A few months later, she called our office. She had been sued by a tenant who slipped on the stairs. She asked if there was anything we could do for her. Unfortunately, there was not. Because she did not have her asset protection in place, all of her assets were fair game for the plaintiff and his attorney, including her home equity, bank accounts, and all of her duplexes. The worst part is, this is a common story. In fact, 50% of business owners across the country are being held personally responsible when their businesses or investment holdings are sued because they either aren't incorporated or are not in compliance with corporate formalities. That is why it is so important to put protections in place before you start growing your wealth. And just as important, you must follow the formalities to continue those protections. For Garrett Sutton's Colby Index, please see companion file number 14. Systems. Systems equals IT by Shane Caniglia, president of the Rich Dad Company and IT Wizard. Today's business marketplace worships at the altar of IT, information technology. It has changed the way the world does business and provides a wealth of opportunities for those who embrace its power. On the flip side, the evolution of technology is constant and fast-paced and demands that we are both vigilant and proactive. To do anything less today is business suicide. In today's world, systems in the BI triangle is IT. Technology has become the core of business infrastructures and impacts every aspect of a business, from legal and cash flow to product and communications, especially communications. It represents big-time rewards, as well as some risks. We use systems for two main things, communication and analytics. We have systems for communication, both internal and external, and as I wrote about in the team section, teams cannot over-communicate. I can't stress it enough. Communication is essential and constant, both internal and external. We use technology and systems to make sure the team is focused on ideas and products. We also use systems to tell us what did or didn't work in regard to our messaging and marketing. There are tools that help our marketing teams learn what we need to do to tweak or adjust what we communicate or how we position messages and products. We tweak, assess, then try again. It always comes back to communication, which, by the way, is a component on its own in the BI triangle. Communications, no surprise there. The BI triangle is really a system of systems that are all connected. The key function of internal systems is to leverage technology to paint a story of what is happening in the marketplace and how you can use it to your advantage. Today, Technology impacts every facet of every business, from web presence to accounting, HR, and business systems. It's changed how we approach sales and